evening. You're listening to Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it is 11 minutes before 8 a.m. Today is Monday, December 9th, 2013. I'm Melissa Marconi-Wenzel with Raven News. Sitka's Fortress of the Bear made headlines earlier this fall when it took in two new black bear cubs. The new additions mean the bear habitat will be racing to find new resources and build a new black bear enclosure this winter. A decade ago, the proposal to turn Sitka's decommissioned pulp mill into a bear rescue center sparked a local controversy. In the years since, the fortress has won over some skeptics, but still has a ways to go to fulfill its founder's mission. Rachel Waldhouse from KCAW reports.
Les Kinnear may sound like he's talking to a toddler.
Boy, put your foot here. Foot. Baloo, foot. Foot. You're not paying attention.
Baloo. But Baloo is an 800-pound brown bear.
What? No? Okay.
Kinnear runs Sitka's Fortress of the Bear with his wife, Evie. He's standing nose to snout with Baloo, a 4-year-old, 7-foot-tall brown bear, separated by only a couple inches and a metal grate door. Kinnear was a hunting guide for years, hunting bears along with other big game. Now, he and his wife care for 7 bears in the remains of Sitka's old pulp mill. The bears were all orphaned as cubs and would otherwise have been euthanized. Asked why he started the fortress, Kinnear says,
"Well, all you gotta do is have one of those little bears sit there and lick you on the hand, and you know the answer to that one. That's simple."
The two giant clarifying tanks from the old pulp mill have been converted into large bear pens with high concrete walls.
It has kind of a post-apocalyptic feel in here.
Yeah.
It's not just the bear pens. All the facilities buildings were salvaged from the pulp mill or hauled over secondhand. Everything is rusty. There are piles of tires, sacks of supplies. A flock of assorted poultry roams around. It's a scrappy operation. When the fortress was first proposed, a lot of Sitkins weren't thrilled.
We have one of the largest or the highest known density of brown bears in the world. In the world. And so people are saying, why would you put a zoo in here? That's a good question.
Phil Mooney is the regional wildlife biologist for the Department of Fish and Game. He was skeptical at first, and he wasn't the only one.
Letters went to the governor. It was pretty divisive in the beginning. There was a big campaign to keep our bears wild and that type deal, and that people come here to see wild bears, not zoo bears. And it was there was a lot of, a very strong emotional response.
But Mooney has since changed his mind. He remembers a delegation visiting from the Bronx Zoo. One of the women kept saying how impressed she was with the facility.
I'm like, okay, I'm missing something. And she turned to me and said, you're missing it because you're thinking of this facility as a person. I said, you have issues with the aesthetics of it. The bears don't care about the aesthetics. They care that they've got 3/4 of an acre in there that they can dig and do anything they want out there like a real bear would.
But what really made Mooney a believer was when the Kinnears invited Sitka's 3rd through 5th graders out to the fortress. The Kinnears pitched 2 tents in the bear enclosure, and inside each was a sleeping bag with a hot dog in the bottom.
And the bears ran straight over to the tents, slit them open, pulled the sleeping bags out, ripped the hot dog out, and held the hot dog up and showed the kids. And the kids were like, I'm never taking food in my tent again.
Mooney was impressed. He spends a lot of his time on bear education, trying to train people to avoid the kinds of interactions that lead to dead bears and orphan cubs. In other words, the kind of situations that brought these bears to the fortress in the first place.
This just kills new. If you hold the mic up here, you can probably hear him breathe.
Kills new was the fortress's first bear. Mooney captured him as a cub in the summer of 2007, after his mother was shot trying to enter a lodge near Angoon.
He was malnourished, dehydrated, terrified, traumatized. He had all of the hair burnt off his front paws, clear to the shoulders. A belly full of tapeworms, a mouth full of broken teeth. We started working with him right here in this training room. By the second day, we could hand feed him.
Kinnear says he understands why some folks object to the idea of the fortress. In an ideal world, brown bears shouldn't live in old clarifying tanks, he says. His grand vision for the fortress is much more ambitious. He wants to expand the habitats and eventually start rehabilitating bear cubs to return to the wild. This has been done in British Columbia and the lower 48, but isn't permitted in Alaska.
We aren't going to save a lot of bears. We've only done a dozen in the last, 10 years. At some of the other places around the country where they process and release. You know, they're into the hundreds.
Mooney says releasing bears isn't likely anytime soon. But he says the fortress has a role even without that. He thinks these bears in captivity might turn out to be some of his best tools for keeping the rest of Sitka's bears wild. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Rachel Waldholz.
Halibut fishermen on the Pacific coast of both the U.S. and Canada will see more cuts to their catch limits next year, except in southeast Alaska, where there could be another small increase. Scientists with the International Pacific Halibut Commission, or IPHC, presented their 2013 stock assessment and catch limit options for 2014 during the commission's meeting in Seattle Wednesday. For the last couple of years, the staff had taken a different approach to this. Prior to 2013, they recommended a single set of limits for the various regulatory areas. Now they provide a range of alternatives, along with the potential impacts each could have on halibut stocks. Yet the scientists still focus on one set of potential limits called the blue line. It represents the commission's long-standing policy of harvesting a certain percentage of the legal-sized halibut estimated for each regulatory area. Under the blue line levels that staff presented for 2014, the coastwide catch would total 24.5 million pounds. That's down from 31 million pounds last year. However, the numbers are not directly comparable. That's because, for the first time, they've included additional amounts for halibut wastage, as well as sport charter fleet catch limits for Southeast and the Central Gulf. That's in anticipation of a new regulatory plan for those areas in 2014. Subtracting those newly added factors, the total coastwide catch would be down about 30% from this year. Southeast Alaska is the only region that would see any increase. Under the blue line scenario, the southeast limit would go up about 11% to just over 3.3 million pounds in 2014. The area saw similar bumps up in each of the past 2 years. However, those increases followed a half decade of cuts that reduced the region's catches by nearly 80%. The blue line scenario for the Central Gulf calls for a commercial catch of 7.3 million pounds, which would be a cut of about 33% from this year. On top of that, guided anglers in that area would be allocated just under 1.8 million pounds of halibut. The southeast guided sector would get 760,000 pounds. Among the other regulatory areas, the blue line option puts the British Columbia catch at just under 5 million pounds, which would be a drop of 29% from this year. The IPHC will determine the 2014 catch limits during its annual meeting on January 13th in Seattle. The Petersburg Assembly has agreed to release an edited version of a memo discussing the legal relationship between Petersburg's municipal government and its medical center. And the memo mentioned Sitka as a model for maintaining an effective relationship. Joe Vicknicki reports.
Attorney Jim Brennan wrote the 10-page memo at the request of borough manager Steve Giesbrecht following questions from assembly members this year. KFSK News and the Petersburg Pilot requested the document after assembly member John Hoag mentioned it at a meeting last month. Brennan maintains that the memo is a privileged communication with the assembly and is not subject to public disclosure. The assembly has had several work sessions with the Medical Center Board this year about hospital finances. Borough officials earlier this year told the Medical Center to repay a $1.2 million line of credit that the hospital took out without voter approval. Meanwhile, officials at the Medical Center say they may need borough funding for capital projects in the future. The legal relationship between the municipality and the Medical Center is one of the subjects addressed in the attorney's memo. Assembly member John Haverlick was against releasing it in full.
And that doesn't seem to have public importance. Or, you know, the public should want to know about it, and it's only some of it was one person just asking a question. And the attorney was given all that. It wasn't an assembly issue.
However, Mayor Mark Jensen disagreed. He thought the relationship between the municipality and the publicly owned hospital is a public issue.
It all relates to the taxpayers, because the building, the hospital structure, is owned by the ratepayers, and if there was ever a financial situation that occurred where bankruptcy occurred at the hospital, the borough is going to be responsible for it. And I think all the information at some point is going to be public knowledge.
Five assembly members present voted unanimously to release an edited version of the document. It has three sections of the attorney's opinion removed. As for what remains, Brennan writes that the medical center is not prohibited by Alaska law or local ordinances from investing in the stock market. That was a contention made by Assemblymember Hogue during a work session with the hospital board earlier this year, and a proposed ordinance would put some constraints on hospital investment. As for the relationship between the Petersburg Borough and its hospital, Brennan offers comparisons to Wrangell and Sitka, which also have publicly owned hospitals. Both Sitka and Wrangell, Brennan writes, have enacted municipal code, quote, providing for substantially more involvement and control over their hospitals, unquote. Brennan also looks at public records requirements of other hospitals and notes that a proposed ordinance in Petersburg would require the medical center to release public documents. In addition, the proposed ordinance would require the hospital to go out for competitive bidding for contracts, which is a requirement in both Sitka and Wrangell. Brennan writes that, quote, in nearly all of the subject areas I have outlined, the Sitka and Wrangell boroughs have greater involvement with the hospital management and exert stronger control, unquote. He adds that it's entirely up to the assembly to decide whether to move in this direction. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicknicki.
And that's all for Raven News for this morning. It's 8 a.m. This is KCAW Sitka. You can expect periods of rain today with highs around 43 degrees and light winds. Should be rainy tonight with lows around 35 and southeast winds 5 miles per hour. And expect rain tomorrow with highs around 41 and light winds becoming southeast 5 miles per hour in the afternoon. Coming up at 12:07 this afternoon, we'll have a 2.9-foot low tide. That will be followed at 5:53 tonight by an 8.2-foot high tide. The sun will rise in 28 minutes at 8:28 and will set at 3:21 this afternoon. That's a total of 6 hours and 52 minutes of daylight and a loss of 1 minute and 45 seconds over yesterday. We're going to rejoin National Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining me and have a good morning. This is Raven Radio, your community radio station. You can also go to kcaw.org.